You're listening to a Looney Tunes podcast.
Well, stupid, are you ready?
Okay, Smokey, roll 'em.
That's silly.
Shoot him now!
Gotcha.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to That's Not Quite All, Folks, a Looney Tunes podcast. I'm your ghoulish host, Mark Hillam, joined by...
I am the ghost of Jordan Schmitz. I still do this podcast because, you know, how ghosts have their unfinished business after they die? Well, my unfinished business is I have to keep doing this goddamn podcast even after I'm dead. So, in case you guys don't already know... We love the Halloween season. This is one of the best seasons out there. And I love that we get to do a themed, spooky sort of Looney Tunes podcast. And then we have enough material to do three spooky cartoons or spooky adjacent. They're all three of these are relatively spooky, you would say, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they all have characters being in peril. One in particular I find was actually... pretty effective in how scary it, scary in atmosphere and tone it was. So, that'll be a...
I'd actually say 2 out of 3 have that.
Oh, yes, yeah.
But 3 out of 3 are great, so...
Yes, they're all great, and,
what are we covering?
The ones we will be covering today are Transylvania 65,000, the Gina Davis, Jeff Goldblum film.
No.
I have no idea how that got in there.
No, not the Michael Richards film from the 1980s. There will be no Jeffrey Jones on this podcast. That if you're going to do Jeffrey Jones, tune into Vericon Video. That's a completely different podcast.
Anyway, so Transylvania 65,000, the Bugs Bunny-led short.
Yes.
We also are going to be covering Scaredy Cat, which is a Porky Sylvester picture. As well as a, once again, a sentimental favorite, Hair Raising Hair. And I know sometimes when you say this, like, oh, did you guys plan this on purpose? I did not plan that all three were going to be Chuck Jones shorts. I just knew these were classic, spooky Looney Tunes shorts that are in the lexicon. I'm sure if we like... did a full deep dive, we could find, like, Freeling or Clampett Halloween shorts, but these were three that we found we could have a lot to say about.
Yeah, and it's actually cool that you picked three different distinct eras of Chuck Jones. You have Chuck Jones putting down his Bugs design for Robert McKimson's with Hair-Raising Hair. You have Chuck Jones figuring out what he can do with Sylvester in Scaredy Cat, and you have the last Chuck Jones short that he did with Warner Brothers, or at least the last Bugs Bunny short he did with Warner Brothers in Transylvania 65,000. And you also have three different horror icons he's parodying in all three of these. 65,000 is Boris Karloff, Scaredy Cat is Alfred Hitchcock, and Hair Raising Hair is Peter Leary. So there's lots really to dissect when we get into these, and hopefully we won't get too analytical for our own goods.
All right, so the first short on the docket is Transylvania 65,000. It was released on November 30th, 1963. Nothing of note happened that day.
Really?
Well, there was one thing, but it's a little not safe for work.
Okay, what happened? The great dildo machine opened in Austria or something? Why, what happened?
You're actually not that far off. No,
wait, really?
A adult film star was born that day. Her name is like...
Which one?
Tiffany. Not the artist. I Think We're Alone Now artist. Just a completely different adult film actress named Tiffany.
I just want to say I think the dildo machine joke was funnier than the actual reality you set up there. But okay,
yeah.
Maybe one day we'll hit one of these where there's actually an opening of a big dildo machine in Austria. Kids, don't ask your folks what that is.
Kids aren't listening to this anyway.
I know. Thank
anyways,
God.
Oh, All right, so the director was Chuck Jones. Like I stated earlier, this is his last Bugs Bunny short of the classic era. So late, in fact, that the writer of this short is not his usual partners like Ted Pierce or Michael Maltese, but John Dunne and frequent Jones collaborator Maurice Noble is credited as a co-director for this short.
Yeah, you know, I imagine Chuck couldn't be bothered. He was already moving his stuff into MGM, and Maurice probably just, you know, took it for him.
Yeah. So, so
by the way, Mark, I do have. Were you about to go into the voice acting thing? Because I do have some info on the voice acting.
I was about to say now, Jordan, I do know that you have some interesting facts about some of the voice actors in this.
I do. Yeah, I mean, at least one of them. I know you have an interesting fact about the other one, that she died just this year.
Yeah.
Is that the one thing?
Yeah.
Which, I mean,
is unfortunate.
Damn it, COVID. It is very unfortunate. The other one. Which is, first of all, this is cool because in this era of Warner Brothers, you get outside voice actors other than just the Holy Trinity of Blank, Freeberg, and Foray. But for this one, because they needed a good Dracula-esque voice actor, so they went and got Ben Frommer, who is a voice actor type, jack of all trades in Hollywood. He has the age-old story of being a Polish immigrant in the 1900s, coming over here for an acting career and getting bit roles in just B movies and extra roles in various things. The reason why I know that name, though, the name Ben Frommer, is because Ben Frommer was a bit actor in films directed by one Edward D. Wood Jr.
Oh.
And for those of you who don't know, Ed Wood is this famed bad director who would direct schlocky, unconvincing sci-fi movies like Plan 9 from Outer Space. And I recognize the name Ben Frommer because Mystery Science Theater 3000 covered one of the Ed Wood movies, like The Bride of the Monster, I think, or something along those lines. And the whole end credits of the movie, which they're just baffled, the three leads of that, they're literally just like just making fun of the entire cast of the movies, like, you know, loser Steen Bella, loser, loser Tor Johnson, loser this. And they get to the very end, and as they're going into the theater, you hear Trace Beaulieu as Crow going, but the drunk was good, Ben Frommer. So that's how I know that name. Patented Ed Wood supporting actor and friend of Mystery Science Theater. Surprised he ended up here, though.
Who played him in Tim Burns' movie?
I have to check if he's in that. All right, let's see if there's anyone from here.
You know who else is in that movie?
Who?
Jeffrey Jones!
Oh, God.
God damn it!
How
God
did I do it. This? I'm not... No, I don't think he was. But it would have been funny if he was. Who would they have gotten? Would they have gotten, like, Martin Landau doing another accent? Oh, I'm now Ben Frommer for some reason. I came from different part of Poland than Bela Lugosi.
Yeah, so he plays Count Blood Count, as the name of a very over-the-top kind of vampire name. And the other voice actress who plays a two-headed bird is voiced by Julie Bennett, who I can have stated. She just recently passed away. And that is something, watching these shorts, you just assume, oh, all these people who worked on these shorts, they're all dead. It's the brutal truth, but kind of true. But yeah, she just passed away in March. Her most popular role was Cindy Bear in the Yogi Bear franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And, it's a really, really tragic thing. She also voiced, and this is just a personal thing for me, she was the second voice for Aunt May in the 1990 Spider-Man TV show, which was a very inspirational show for me, because that was like my go-to to the Spider-Man mythos. So, yeah.
Of course.
Going to the shorts, we start with, like, conventional Bugs Bunny shorts, just Bugs Bunny burrowing his way because he's going to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, for some reason.
Go Bucks.
And he immediately runs into a sign, and it says, like, Pittsburgh, Transylvania. So I love how, like, everyone makes, like, oh, the Pennsylvania joke. But I love how this is the short that's, like, let's also make fun of Pittsburgh, too.
It's only Pittsburgh. It's not like it's like a sacred cow of a city in America. It's just Pittsburgh.
And so then we are introduced to Agatha and Emily, who is a two-headed vulture who probably eats everything in sight, because they're talking about the rabbit and how he's delicious, and that they wouldn't mind, like, eating him.
It's like a Ka the Snake sort of sexualized ravenous eating kind of thing. Or at least Ka the Snake in the Jon Favreau version. I can't think of the guy in the original thing. Yeah.
So, Bugs immediately says, okay, grow up, see you later. He goes to this old castle, which he thinks is a hotel for some reason. Rings the doorbell. Of course, it plays a typical Hearst song, Song of the Dead. Yes.
I love that.
And there's a great visual gag of the Count opening the window viewer, and you see his eyes are green. Very typical horror bad guy. And then, as Bugs is talking, you just see both of his eyes going left and right while the eye frame is stuck in place. I love that detail.
It's great. That's so silly and creepy.
Yeah, and then, of course, the Count bites him in. Bugs like, oh, you know, I just want to, you know, a telephone. Like, what's the telephone booth? And then, eventually, the Count shows up. And then, somehow, the Count just... He takes him up to his room, and of course, while he's doing this, Bugs is just talking about how the hotel looks homey and comfortable, and it's and nice recreational facilities, which I love how, as he's saying this, of course, it's just gruesome, like, gothic things, like a piano that could eat you, and just, like, bat photos hung everywhere.
The backgrounds and layouts in this are amazing.
Oh, yeah. And I just love Mel's delivery on...
Nice little plant you've got here, Doc. Interesting decor, homey, comfortable. Nice recreational facilities.
Very, like, casual man about town way of doing it.
Yeah.
And then, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, because the whole thing about this, or at least the first half, or most of this, really, is that Bugs is really oblivious in this one. All of these scary and creepy things are going on around, and he's not really seeing them for the scary and creepy things. He's just, you know, he's oblivious for most of the cartoon. And I had to wonder, as I was watching this, is Bugs the right character to be this oblivious this entire time, to be this sort of passive kind of participant in all of this? Especially when I compare it to the next character, the next cartoon that we're covering involving a sort of oblivion to all spooky things happening. And it sort of works in this, and his oblivion leads to some really funny moments later, but I'm not entirely convinced.
All right, so Count Blood Count, he takes Bugs to his room, and Bugs is like, but Doc, I didn't ask for a room. And just said, oh, nonsense. No, we'll sleep now. Telephone tomorrow. Which...
Yeah, he's so good.
And of course, this Count's going like, oh, rest. Rest is, it's good for the blood.
It's just, I mean...
goodbye, Rabbit. I mean, good night. Shuts the door. And I love this, because he shuts the door, and immediately, are you asleep yet? And Bugs is going, no. And I just love the little animation there.
Yeah, of him springing back in.
Yeah,
Ben Frommer really fits this part. He's genuine. He gets what this part is going for, and he's really, like, nailing it. So.
Yeah, so again, Cat's like, okay, well, good night, and closes the door. And we get a little scene of Bugs just not being able to sleep. You know, so I can't sleep. I don't love these books. And We do a panning shot of these books with gag titles, and if there's anything that Simpson commentaries have taught me, it's that doing sign gags and book gags are like the hardest things that they come up with, because it usually appears like 5 seconds, and you only get like a quick chuckle out of it. So I don't know how long this took, John Dern and Chuck, but the book titles are Bone Guide, Blood Type, oh! Unusual Blood Types, Rise and Fall of the Roman Vampire.
I love that.
I like that one. Yeah. I like that one. It's funny. Oh, Bloody Types, Health and Care of Fangs, Magic Words and Phrases,
yeah.
And Embalmers, and Embalmer's Almanac.
Right. It's funny that you mentioned The Simpsons, because this entire scroll of puns seems like a precursor to the one from Treehouse of Horror 4, where it's two secret vampire room, in parentheses, no garlic.
One of my favorites.
It's my cover photo every October.
Yeah, so eventually Bugs just goes, oh, magic words and phrases. Okay, I'll read this. So he reads it. And of course, as he's reading it, the back of his bed, it gets pulled out, and the count's about to get Bugs. Funny enough, this is only the first time in these three that we'll see this gag. But anyways, as the count's about to get him, he says, abracadabra, and then the count turns into a bat.
Yeah.
And then we just get a nice little gag here, just, you know, Bugs going like, oh man, what big mosquitoes they got here, and he's just like, hold on, slaps him, and of course the count just, he gets up, and he's just tired, and as he's flying out, of course Bugs just goes, hocus pocus, and I just love the frame of the count back in human form. Confused. He has a confused expression on his face, like, wait, what? And then immediately falls into the river, kind of like a Wile E. Coyote sort of gag.
I love how goofy looking the count looks as a bat, especially after he's being beaten with things. And I also just, like, again, basically the rest of this cartoon is powered by this abracadabra hocus pocus gag. And it's simple, but funny. It's like okay, but every time Bugs says a thing unwittingly, there's something funny happens, he turns back into this. And it's simple, and it just works every time they use it because of just how simple and how well done the concept is.
Yeah, so eventually we kept the Bugs going downstairs because he's hungry for, like oh, where's the restaurant here? Because he's hungry, and if there's anything that Kitchen Nightmares has taught me, it's that 9 out of 10 times, the local restaurant in your hotel you're staying at is probably bad.
Go across the street to, like, a Denny's, and then, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, so, of course, as Bugs look for the restaurant, he's singing a classic tune of It's Magic, which is it's a popular song made in 1947. It was introduced by Doris Day.
Okay, at least it's not Dinah Shore.
At least it's not. Damn it. I thought that was the same person for 5 seconds. Anyways. I'm like, oh, her again. Oh, nope. Different star actress. So he's singing the song. He's just going like, of course, the count's right behind him. Saying no abracadabra. Count turned into a bat. And he says, hocus pocus. That turns back into the count. A very simple.
It's very simple.
Yeah, a confirmation of the concept. And then eventually the count just gets, you know, ticked off. He just goes right up to Bugs and says, "No, I'm a vampire." And then Bugs just goes, "Oh yeah? Well, abracadabra. I'm an umpire."
Easy joke, but it works.
And then the count just goes, "Oh, hocus pocus. I'm a bat." And then, and of course, Bugs just goes, okay, well, abracadabra. I called her into a bat, abracadabra. And then, and the bat just goes, puts on glasses, like, you wouldn't hit a bat with glasses on, would you?
That I loved. I laughed at his delivery of that.
Yes, just smack. I was like, no, he wouldn't.
And, oh God, this next bit.
You want to go into this bit?
Oh my God. This is this next bit is just, it's the simplest shit. It's just a back and forth of the Count picking up, like, you know, about to crush Bugs with a brick, like holding one up. And then Bugs, just knowing his magic words, keeps turning him back into a bat, you know, just going abracadabra. And then the brick crashing down on him. And you just hear the very muffled Ben Fromer underneath the brick going. And then just jutting back up, looking very dazed and tired and just about being crushed a million times. And Bugs keeps freaking doing it.
And I love in the third time, when he turns back into a Count with the brick, he has these, like, bloodshot eyes.
Yes.
Like, he's just so damaged. He's like, Eve's corneas are like, I can't stand this.
Just the very, the pathetic, crushed, muffled, it reminds me, ironically, of Bela Lugosi going, pull the string! Pull the string! Which begs the question, do all Polish acting immigrants in Ed Wood movies sound like that when they're in peril?
Who knows? So, yeah, so then eventually Bugs just decides to mess with the magic words. It just goes like, hocus-cadabra, abracapocus. And at first it's very simple gags, just, you know, the Count, except his head is the bat, and then another version where his head is on the bat wings. And then it just says Newport News. And then
it's Witch Hazel.
It's just randomly, just a ramage into Witch Hazel, and Bugs just goes, well, I can do better than that. Which.
Walla Walla Washington.
Yes. Yeah. In which the cow turns into a two-headed male vulture, and Bugs just goes a very, very Brooklyn, like, a girl, like, very
Goyles.
Yeah, just, hey, look, who's here? And then, of course, the girls are impressed, like, ooh, and then they flee off into the nights, you know, cure the problem, and then we fade to black, and...
But it's not the end.
It's not the end. Because we fade back in, and Bugs, he finds the working payphone, which is in a coffin, because gothic horror. And now he's calling the, his travel agency in Perth Amboy. And then he just sings to himself, says abracapocus. His ears, they become wings. Just tells the operator, never mind, I'll fly home myself. And our short ends with Bugs just flying into the moon, getting away from the castle, and in a way, Chuck Jones getting the hell out of there.
Yeah. I love that ending, though.
Oh, yeah. It's very... It's silly, but still funny.
Yes.
Yeah, I really did like this short. This was a short that I haven't seen too recently. I think the last time I saw this short was... Also, probably the last time I watched Quackbusters, because this short is in that.
Oh, yeah.
And,
I think, isn't Scaredy Cat also in Quackbusters?
I believe so.
Yeah, wait. Makes sense, because I know that Jumpin' Jupiter is.
What I like the most about this, and I guess I'll go to my Anvil rating now, I'm going to give this a 4 out of 5. I mean, a 4 out of 5, because, again, this is... It's at 63, so we're even further into the 60s than we were last week. But even so, it still is able to harness the spirit of the classic Looney Tunes. Like, it doesn't feel out of place. And,
right.
Again, well, I do feel like it's slightly underrated, I find. You know, again, unless you've watched Quackbusters 100 times, you... wouldn't quite know of this short existing, but, I find the short to be pretty all right.
I'm giving it a 3.5 out of 5 because I think that it takes a bit too long to get going. I think the first half is too talky, And I think they could have used something more of a device in order to, because it's just bugs playing off of the count, and they feel very incongruent a lot of the time until like the second half where they're playing off each other perfectly. I feel like Bugs talking his way through the first half was the wrong way to go about it. And it's sort of like a lot of this cartoon is sort of happening to Bugs, and he's oblivious to it. And that can only go so far in terms of humor. Again, I love the second half of this. I love Ben Frommer as the Count. I think he's hysterical. I just wish it was a little bit better in the beginning. But I still like it, though. So we go from the 60s back for the rest of these into the 40s. And we pick up with Scaredy Cat, which is a very fun Porky and Sylvester cartoon. This one was released on December 18th, 1948. This is a bit of a cooler birthday than yours, your episodes, Mark. Brian Chaz Chandler, who was the bassist for the rock band The Animals, was born on this day. The Animals, of course, famous for classic rock standards like House of the Rising Sun, Please Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood, We Gotta Get Out of This Place. They're very cool, and he was the bassist. So that's what happened on in this day in 48.
That is more awesome than mine, yes.
It is, yeah, because The Animals are genuinely pretty awesome. All right, so going into this, and this is another Chuck Jones cartoon written by Michael Maltese. And this is an early pairing for both Porky and Sylvester. It's sort of a duo deal because they didn't know what else to do with Porky at this point. They were running out of things to do with him. Sylvester had just done Tweety Pie earlier in the year. He didn't have his name yet. He would get his name in this cartoon. Porky would call him Sylvester, and from there that would be his name. Charlie the dog was not working in terms of a foil for Porky. This was basically a let's see if these two characters work together sort of thing. And again, as we discussed in our Sylvester episode, Sylvester you can pair with just about anybody and it'll work. Tweety, not so much. And Porky similarly has that sort of quality to him. So honestly, this cartoon and this setting is really a really good match, as I'll get into. Okay, so getting into the cartoon, Scaredy Cat, the first few shots of this, which is an exterior shot of a mansionist castle of sorts, a shot of a key going into a door, silhouettes, it's all very Hitchcockian. And it's all very suspenseful and well done. And this is what we're getting into for this one, because this is a very cool and borderline kind of suspenseful and creepy cartoon that I'm glad they didn't neuter for the audiences. So getting into this one, we have the relationship of Porky being the owner, the hapless house owner, getting a real estate gig, and Sylvester being the cowardly cat that Porky owns. And I'm going to just say before I get further into the conflict, Mel Blanc's acting as Porky in this one is wonderful. I love his frantic, disgruntled, annoyed stuff towards Sylvester as this short goes on. I also love the timid, wordless Sylvester character and the whole conceit of him seeing things that Porky doesn't. There's a reason they do two more of these in the 1950s. This partnership really works. Both are great foils for each other. But yeah, the whole thing is that, you know, they're settling into this house. Sylvester is seeing and hearing things in the distance, creepy things in this darkened, abandoned house. And Porky is oblivious to them. He's not seeing a dang thing. And so there's the great gag starting up where Porky bids Sylvester goodnight. And right as Porky goes up the stairs, Sylvester hears something else and literally attaches himself to Porky as he goes up the stairs, like stuck to him like glue. And the best part about this is that Porky continues going through his nightly routine, putting on his pajamas and getting himself into bed with Sylvester still stuck to his backside. Yeah. And he literally does not notice until he flops the pillow and goes absentmindedly, "Good night, Sylvester." And then he takes a long beat, turns, looks at Sylvester smiling weakly under him and just goes, "Sylvester!" Already, the dynamic between these two characters are so good, and not too many spooky things have happened. Of course, this next scene, this next reveal, when Sylvester's catapulted downstairs, spooky things start happening. Because we have a very dark eventual reveal of the silhouettes of sacrifice-friendly mice inhabiting this place, wheeling a doomed cat tied up as they do essentially a death march, complete with an executioner. That is a very Ari Aster, dark as hell, hereditary ass reveal for your cartoon with children's characters. Yeah. And that's the kind of ballsy stuff that Chuck Jones would do willingly in this era. And I kind of have respect for that.
And then we have Sylvester's reaction to it, which for a long time was my Twitter profile picture, because I loved it so much.
Yes.
Of just, like, his heart beating, and his eyes go from, like, blue to yellow to blue to yellow. And he just catapults himself up to Porky's room, which...
For the record, folks, this picture is still, I believe, Mark's Discord profile.
Yes,
image. I believe that's...
Yes. It's still mine. So when we record this podcast, that image of Sylvester getting freaked out of his mind is what Jordan sees every time we record.
Yes, and I was wondering where I recognized it.
Yeah.
Okay, the energy of Sylvester running up and jumping on Porky and Porky yelling for police, this reminds me. We're still in the 1940s. This is not too far removed from the Clampett era of wild energy and wild movement and everything. We still have a lot of that energy floating around the WB, floating around Termite Terrace.
Oh, yeah.
And it would die down by the time the 1950s start, but it's still here and it's still inhabiting this Chuck Jones cartoon, which is great because it works for this cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
Sylvester's very frightened impression of what he saw reminds me a lot of a cartoon show that would come out about 50 years later on the Cartoon Network called Courage the Cowardly Dog.
Oh, yeah.
Literally, it's just him doing frightened, wordless impressions. Okay, better than that, but still. I would not be shocked if this cartoon inspired Courage. Okay, again, Porky and Sylvester work off each other beautifully here. Porky acts like a voice of reason. Even in this case, Sylvester is right. And his spitefulness... Like, after he eventually says, okay, you can sleep up here. Like, saying, good night, you little cowardly Sylvester, you, is so good.
And I'll...
This is a Sylvester cartoon, but Porky just makes it funnier by being a fun foil. This, as they find out, is what he's best at.
Yeah, and I'll also, Sylvester is so petrified by this incident that, first of all, Porky doesn't believe Sylvester by just going like, oh, what ridiculous acting. Just... I just love the idea.
Can't even get the word out.
Can't get the word out. And then Sylvester just once again, 1940s, eventually he just goes into the drawer and takes a gun out. And like, for some reason, this almost drives Sylvester to kill himself. And then Porky's like, Sylvester, just fine. You can sleep up here if it makes you happy.
Yeah. Just the extent of the ideas like this. Okay, so we get, you know, the sequence where Porky and Sylvester are sleeping in the same bed. The mice come in and wheel their bed outside the window, literally hanging by a branch outside. And Porky, of course, like, ends in mind that he goes, Sylvester, could you go out and close the window? And Sylvester, I love that he just absentmindedly walks outside of the room to close what he thinks is the window as Porky and the bed are chucked back inside. You see, here, the oblivious humor works for me because Porky is not always this oblivious. And eventually figures out that, hey, wait a minute, I was being oblivious this whole time. Sylvester, you were right. I mean, that comes a lot later in this cartoon. But this oblivious sort of persona for Porky works better than the one for Bugs because Porky is not exactly the hero of the story and he has someone to work off of in Sylvester. Hero works a lot better for me. Also, the middle of this cartoon, you can do little gags to pit Porky further against Sylvester. Like... A mouse tries dropping an anvil on Porky. Sylvester saves him, Porky only sees Sylvester in the anvil and cuts to the wrong conclusion. Little gags like that work.
Yeah.
And they work really well here. And then we get like a bunch of little gags where Porky narrowly avoids death, about like knives getting thrown at him or a trapdoor opening.
The speed.
Yes.
I adore the speed because like the like and I'm like far ahead, but I just love the fact that there's a scene where Porky gets himself, like, into, like, the laundry basket.
Yes.
And as soon as he gets out, the laundry basket lowers as he's walking. A trap door opens as he keeps walking.
Yes.
Just the speed of like these mice being so gung-ho to kill Porky.
It's so good. And it's just so well-timed.
Yeah.
And then we get Sylvester going through that trap door in the laundry room, coming back sheet white.
And to leave it up to the audience's imagination, What did he see?
Yes, and I love that. I love that we don't know. We literally have him just wordlessly sheet white going up to Porky. And I also love Porky dragging him downstairs. And slowly as he bonks down all the stairs, he regains his color. So next, Porky literally goes into the kitchen to prove Sylvester wrong. And within seconds, he's become part of the latest mouse death march, tied up and holding a sign saying, "You were right, Sylvester." It's dark, but it's insanely funny. So here is honestly the heart and soul of this cartoon, because Sylvester runs away, literally runs off into, like, outside of the house. And this part here where Sylvester's conscious appears with a whole slide board of paper and reminds him that he's bigger than the mice, that he's not completely a coward, and going, "Get in there and fight, fight, fight." That is great.
Oh, yeah.
That is just the wonderful arc-defining moment for Sylvester in this one. And honestly, it's a moment that the other two sort of lack. I haven't seen the other two in a while, but they don't really have a big triumphant ending like this one. Sylvester relinquishes the arc, runs back in, and beats the crap out of the mice until they all run away. It's a genuinely awesome ending. Yeah. You don't see a lot of the carnage, but it's awesome.
Yeah, then, you know, Porky chest, and he's like, "Oh, thank you so much for saving me. Thank you so much." And then the real ending happens.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so as Porky is like, "Oh, thanks, Sylvester," and then he's standing underneath the alarm clock. The alarm clock door is open. It's the executioner with a anvil? Pulling ball?
A mallet, I think.
A mallet.
Porky sees it, Sylvester doesn't.
And then Sylvester gets knocked out. Not killed, just knocked out cold. And then executioner takes off the mask, and we just end with this goofy character. Turns out that the executioner was this, like, goofy character saying, like, "Oh, cats are so silly." And then we...
I'll tell you what it is. It's a Lou Lair impression.
Ah.
It's just a radio personality named Lou Lair who said, like, "Monkeys is the craziest people," or something along that. And it's basically just going on a topical joke that 1940s audiences would get, which is a very 1940s Looney Tunes idea.
Yeah.
If they would have done this about 5 years later, that they would not have ended like that.
And I kind of wish they didn't.
Yeah, me either.
And this isn't us just going like, "We don't understand this reference, so it's bad." No, it's not that at all. It's just, you had a good ending here. You could just end it on this nice little note of Sylvester saving the day, and, like, I don't know, like maybe Sylvester falls through a trap door or something, like, if you really need an ending where Sylvester gets hurt at the end. But just having this random, like, "See, the executioner wasn't a bad guy, he was crazy." It's like, no, that it's not fulfilling, is what I'm trying to say here. It's not, yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, Quackbusters would take out that ending?
I think so.
I imagine so. Yeah. Because I don't remember that as much from watching that. Okay. Overall, I genuinely love this one. The Porky-Sylvester dynamic is so damn good. I love that Porky eventually sees Sylvester is right and Sylvester has to triumphantly save him. I love so many of the little horrific gags in this. I just wish, A, that I would have seen Sylvester's triumphant beating up of the mice from the inside, and B, that the ending would have been different. But I'm giving it a 4.5 out of 5. Excellent in so many ways, and really feel good with that ending thing with Sylvester.
I am also going to give this a 4.5 out of 5.
Nice.
I'm deducting 0.5 points for the stupid ending, but everything else about the short was pretty darn good. I loved how the attempts of murdering Porky happened practically a mile a minute. It was really good gag work when it came to that. So yeah.
All right.
So our third and most gruesome. It's the most funniest one of these. It's
it's the best.
It's a hair raising hair. It was released on May 25th, 1946. And in terms of anything that happened that day, Patty Hill, the co-composer of the song Happy Birthday, passed away at the age of 78.
Okay. I actually have a better thing that happened on this day.
Oh, good, please.
It's actually hysterical because I found it. On this day in history, on May 25th, 1946, Jordan, the country of Jordan, gained independence from Britain, and a king of Jordan was crowned. So on that day, I was freed.
I saw that in my research, too, but I'm like, I don't know, is this too, like, stupid?
Oh, it's not stupid enough, but I had to.
Yeah.
I had to.
In terms of any some interesting facts about the short, this was the last Chuck Jones short in which Chuck would use his own Bugs Bunny design. His Bugs was a little more round. I don't know, a bit of like a of a taller face, if that makes any sense. Than more of a, like,
No, I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. And he started using Robert McKimson's design for the future, which...
Right.
Yeah. Also, it's a Bugs Bunny short that, for the first time, used both uses of the word hair, both in terms of a rabbit and in terms of hair on a human. And, most importantly, it introduced Gossamer, who is referred to as just the monster. He didn't get his name until Water over here?
I don't know. I always just, in our house, he was always just called the Big Red Monster, because it's funnier that way.
Again, so it was directed by Chuck Jones, written by Ted Pierce. And we start with, it's a regular night in the forest. Bugs Bunny is singing the song Sweet Dream, Sweetheart, which was in a 1944 released film called Hollywood Canteen. So, again, like, that's a reference that audiences of the time would have known.
Okay.
And the camera zooms in on Bugs's resting home, puffs up, he's in his pajamas, and he tells us that he tells us, oh, do you ever have the feeling you was being watched?
Which is a great opening line.
We zoom out to find that he is in fact being watched. In fact, he's being watched by a caricature of Peter Lorre.
Yeah, it's clearly Peter Lorre. It couldn't be anybody else.
Yeah, it's Mel doing the voice, so it's a very clearly Peter Lorre impression, because he was a very popular actor at the time, starring in Casablanca. He was up. Of course I know this. Peter Lorre also played technically he played the first ever Bond villain in a TV production of Casino Royale, which was done a couple of years earlier before the Sean Connery version.
Yes, Barry Nelson played James Bond in that one.
Yes.
Lorre, his whole thing was that he was one of the biggest stars of German Expressionism, being the creepy star of Fritz Lang's 1931 film M, which is an incredible film if you've never seen it. He was in a lot of B-movies, suspense movies, horror movies. He was in the original The Man Who Knew Too Much, which is the second time I have referenced The Man Who Knew Too Much in this, first with the Doris Day one for Jimmy Stewart, now with this one. Did Casablanca, he did Maltese Falcon, and a lot of people did impressions of him because he's this weird-looking German guy who went, yes, a lot. So, but not like a Frank Nelson, yes, like just a yes.
Yes. So.
Yes.
We then see this. That a being is being held captive in this cage, and the Peter Lorre scientist just goes, oh, don't worry, I'll get a nice rabbit for you to eat. And he winds up this mechanical female dame rabbit.
Yeah. By the way, before you get too much further, I love the detail that the door to Gossamer's room is just marked monster.
Oh, yeah.
Like, very helpful. Like, I wonder where the monster is. Oh, yeah, not the big booming room where there's a lot of noise and red fur coming from it. No, just the one that says monster.
So eventually, Bugs goes, never mind. And then Bugs immediately recognizes the robotic game robot. And Bugs is like, I'm going to chase that tail, literally. And of course, as Bugs is being lured into the castle, which... Again, going back to that Treehouse of Horror segment, just has in neon lights, evil scientist.
Arguably the one from Water, Water, Everywhere, every hair is funnier because it's literally, it's with the music. It's evil scientist, boo. Evil scientist, boo. So good.
So eventually, Bugs gets into the castle, and immediately Peter Lorre just, he locks up the place, locks all up, and Bugs just goes,
You don't need to lock that door, Mac. I don't want to leave.
And he just immediately goes do the robotic dame. He's like, oh, baby, you know. He kisses the real robot. It immediately combusts. It just blows up. Bugs just goes.
That's the trouble with some dames. Kiss them and they fly apart. Well, that's that.
Bugs just heads to the door. Scientist stops him and just says, oh, stay, because he's got another little friend who'd like to eat, meat
and then...
you.
And... Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I watched this last night and I laughed at it so much. It's just another friend, and then literally he, like, because it was just Peter Lorre pushing him towards the door, and now it's him pushing Peter Lorre towards the door, just going. So, you know, he realizes that, you know, there is a monster behind that door, and that, you know, things now look bleak, and this is followed by a great reaction.
Well, goodbye!
Literally just, like, takes out the back of his tire so you get all of his things, looks at Peter Lorre, goes,
and don't think it hasn't been a little slice of heaven, because it hasn't.
And then, of course, you know, Gossamer eventually comes in, and, you know, as Bugs begins to leave. And I love Bugs' gradually ascending yipe signs upon seeing Gossamer. At first, very small, then a very big yipe. It's great. All right, going forward, you know, Bugs trying to keep Gossamer from coming through a door. This is one of two amazing fourth wall gags in this cartoon, where Bugs holding the door up goes, is there a doctor in the house? A silhouette stands up in front of the cartoon. Going,
I'm a doctor.
And Bugs, instead of actually using him as a doctor, goes,
what's up, Doc?
Perfect. For the longest time, I always thought, I always imagine in the writer's room, they're just going like, okay, this is 1946. Yeah. So like 6 years ago, they just had a set of Bugs. And it's like, okay, well, Bugs has to say, what's up, Doc? They're like, yeah. Okay, what can we do? He has to say, what's up, Doc? Ask for a doctor. Just, and actually the idea of like, okay, can we figure it out? Let's go to lunch. We're done.
Pretty much.
Figured it out. So.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, it's so good. Okay. So, Bugs passes a mirror, Gossamer passes the same mirror, and his reflection runs away. That is a simple gag. I love it so much. Then we have Bugs disguising as a lamp, which is also really funny because he's really well into the part. But then as Gossamer looks over, he starts determinedly dancing away the next time we cut to him. So pretty much every gag in this cartoon hits, folks. It's just wall to wall to wall, just really good gags. And then right after this, I believe, is the iconic bit where Bugs does Gossamer's nails, which has been
parodied. Bugs.
You're gonna find out it is
circuit. Don't monster. No, we're done. What's up?
All the lengths you try and prove me wrong with.
Keep going.
But yeah, no, it's the great scene where Bugs does Gossamer's nails and does the whole hairdresser routine of, oh, you monsters leave such interesting lives, which of course is a parody of, you know, the whole hairdresser, oh, you celebrities must be so amusing with all your amusing celebrity parties and whatever that trope was back in the day of hairdressers or nail file people.
And that trope still kind of works. Like, yes. It's a 1940s like thing, but like, hairdressers still act like that, I think.
Yes.
I don't know.
I haven't been famous going to a hairdresser yet.
No.
And of course, you know, let's dip our patties in the water.
Wow!
which is almost a Peter Boyle noise. Just the little look on his face with both masks.
Yeah, which is a great bit of animation there. Gossamer just crying stuff. And then the monster is hiding in a hole in a wall behind a painting. And Bugs is like not aware. It seems like Bugs is not aware until he just pokes the eyes of the portrait and then just immediately rips away to reveal that, yes, that was the monster.
And then Bugs tries that.
Then Bugs tries it, and Gossamer's like, And of course, he's not too quick. So Bugs pokes the eyes again. And we get this just, like, this weird gag of just, Gossamer is once again, he's behind the wall. And, you know, as Bugs is walking, he hears footsteps. And this little bit of just, you know, just your Carl Stalin music, just... And Bugs does know he knocks on the wall. The wall also knocks back. Krasnex has a mallet, whamps it, and actually really nice like perspective animation or whatever you call it. Just you get a feel of how big Gossamer is, and he just falls right out of the wall.
Just the cutout of Gossamer is great. And so, having disposed of the monster, every time he says this, I laugh.
The front door stage right. None the worse for his harrowing experience.
I have quoted it many times as well. Right after this is the Bugs crammed into Gossamer crammed into a knight's armor gag, right?
Yes, it is the knight's armor gag, which is great.
Which Bugs has a great reaction to, just looking over and just pointing and laughing, essentially.
Because the visual, it's Gossamer in a knight costume, but he's obviously too big for the knight costume. So it's just like this badly put together knight costume, just red fur coming out of everywhere. it's like if Animal from the Muppets dressed up as a knight.
Jousting!
Then they've just cut to Bugs with a horse dressed up as a golden knight with a joust. And of course, it's a cartoon. It's like Bugs is operating in like a train. And of course, the Bugsy hits the Gossamer dressed up as a knight. Gossamer slams into the wall in a great little gag. He turns into a can of a canned monster.
Canned monster, which canned is so monster. Good. Then we get another bit where, you know, and so having redisposed of the monster, and he begins to leave again, steps on a Gossamer-sized rug, Gossamer disguising himself as a rug and then strangling him. And then this part I always love.
Oh, yes.
Because not only does he go back to the feeling of paranoia from the beginning, you ever get the feeling you were being watched, he tries to draw out this paranoia in Gossamer, and then finally he points right at us and goes, look, out there in the audience. And Gossamer saying his first line in the cartoon goes,
people!
And he runs through like 40 walls and 40 cartoons.
So yeah, he just runs off.
And then we get him redisposing, right?
Yeah. He just goes like, and so in redisposing of the monster, exit our, and then as you're saying that, if the robot
turns
back here, mechanical, and of course this robot just gives his hand, so he just goes, so it's mechanical. And then Bugs just turns, he acts like a robot and walks off screen, and that's where we ended. And oh yay.
it's so good. Oh my god, I don't think a single gag didn't work in that whole cartoon.
Oh man, no.
Oh my god. It's so funny. First of all, it's funny that you have this big red furry monster running after Bugs Bunny. That's already a funny design in itself, and I'm glad they would go back to that well in Water Every Hair. But just how Bugs remains like flippant and so funny in all of this peril running about this castle, and how it keeps being a very Bug-centric. He remains in power as all these crazy things are happening. And it's really just a testament as to how good of a character Bugs Bunny is.
Exactly. Exactly. I agree 100%.
And honestly, his strengths here contrast completely for me with Transylvania 65,000 about how he is demonstrating his personality in that cartoon versus this one. This one is the real Bugs because he's not being deterred and he's still dominating every single scene. The energy is still there.
Which again, I think that does have something to do with the fact that he was a relatively new character at this point. So they had a lot more energy. Hell, Chuck had a lot more energy in this than he probably did in 1963, because I'm pretty sure by that point he was just looking at the door like, okay, finish this, I'm out of here.
Yeah, but this one is undeniably a classic, one of the best of that era, and one of the best Halloween-themed in May cartoons. I'm giving it a 5 out of 5. Mark, do you have any?
I agree. I'm pretty much everything you said. I mean, every joke hits. The plot, again, very simple plot. It's just Bugs Bunny gets chased after by a monster. Very simple, but each gag is a laugh a minute. And again, yes. I really agreed with your statement about how it is a great demonstration of what Bugs can do in any given situation. He can do disguises. He can have mallets and weapons and stuff. He can get by on his wit. It's just so damn funny. Like if you're like, I feel like this should be in like let's say like you're a writer or something, and you get the assignment of, okay, you have to write you are in charge of writing Bugs Bunny shorts. You know, we're putting you in charge of writing these shorts. This is one of the shorts someone should be assigned to watch to get a feel on how to write for Bugs Bunny, because it's just spot on.
It's truly great, and I'm glad we got to cover it today, and I'm glad it caps off a very suitably spooky and hopefully successful Halloween episode.
Yes. Now, let's read some spooky comments. All right, so our first comment is from Cody, also known as a Wandering Writer on Twitter. His thoughts. Hi. So his thought on Scaredy Cat is that he hasn't seen it in so long, but he remembers it just scaring the crap out of him when he was younger. Which
yeah,
I mean, that is a very dark dark short. You know, it's like it does imply that the mice kill a cat in that one. So
yeah, it's genuinely a dark, like, it goes to some very screwed up places. I think it's like the perfect Halloween short because it really just like lets your imagination do a lot of the heavy lifting and give you some really devious images of what's going up in this house. And that's why we like it so much, I think, right?
Yeah. All right, so we got another comment here from a co-podcaster of ours.
Oh yeah, it's Brandon from Veracon, who I've been. In case of none of you know, I am also in another podcast about movies called Veracon Video, where we take a look at movies in the video store era, '80s through the early 2000s. So yeah, Brandon Hardy from Veracon, whose Twitter Halloween name is Brandon Stein's Monster, which is very cool.
Very nice.
He said, revisited Transylvania 65,000 last night. Haven't laughed that hard in a while. Still a favorite. We agree.
Oh,
right?
Oh yeah.
We it's still as funny as I remembered it. And I mean, look, I have little problems with it here or there, but the humor that can come across, not only from just Bugs sleepwalking around this plot, but also Ben Frommer, like, really giving his all and just doing the asleep yet read, which I've talked to Brandon about it, I think. It's just a sign of an actor who was really with it and who was just really giving fun reads. I love that one still, so I'm all for that. All
right, yeah. So thanks guys for leaving your comments. Thank you.
Yes, and keep letting us know what you think of these shorts. Hopefully we'll agree with you. Hopefully we won't like shout at you on the middle of this. That would be bad.
Oh yeah.
But we love hearing your feedback on stuff that's been made 50, 60 years ago.
Yeah.
So thank you.
All right. So what we're doing next week?
What are we doing next week? Sorry. Yes. No. I don't know. Yeah.
For next week's show, we're going to do a kind of Hollywood show, but not really a Hollywood show. More like a Warner Brothers making fun of Hollywood episode. Ooh. All right, so the shorts we'll be covering are What's Cooking Doc?
Okay.
Hollywood Steps Out.
Okay.
And Slick Hair.
Oh, okay. As you can see, one of those is a favorite. I wonder which one it is. Be prepared. The Slick Hair conversation is probably going to be longer than the conversation for the first two.
All right, so that's the end of our show. If you'd like to keep up with both of us on Twitter, you can follow me at MarkHallam1995.
And you can follow me at TallGuySchmidt.
And if you'd like to have your comments read for our next week's shorts, or keep up with updates on the podcast, you can follow at @that_loony, or type in the podcast title, the first result.
You can also find our podcasts wherever podcasts are readily available. That includes your Apple Podcasts, your Google Podcasts, your Spotify Podcasts, Player FM. We're everywhere, essentially. So wherever you're finding us, keep finding us there.
All right, so until next week, I'm Mark.
And I'm Jordan. Hope you have a happy Halloween, a happy spooky season. Do something genuinely spooky and fun in our honor, or just in the honor of the season. I know it may be a tough holiday to do it this year, but, it's a great holiday. Hope you enjoy it.
Also, we've both been dead the whole time.
Yes, but you probably could have guessed that already,
Oh, yeah. All right. See you next week.
Goodbye, y'all.